You're listening to The God Journey, a place where people thinking outside the box of organized religion can share thoughts and conversation along the journey. Here are your hosts and fellow travelers, Wayne Jacobson and Brad Cummings.
I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Brad Cummings.
And welcome to, the 33rd edition of The God Journey.
How fitting. This will be broadcast about Christmas, right?
Can you believe we got to 33 already? I think that's amazing, first of all.
Well, congratulations.
And now you want to jump right on to Christmas, do you?
Well, aren't we coming up to a Christmas broadcast?
This will actually air during the Christmas weekend, so perhaps that's appropriate. But before we do, I got to tell you, this chipper thing is getting out of hand. I was in Idaho last weekend hanging out with a great group of folks, and in fact, I came back very, very sick. Every home I stayed in, with the exception of the first one, had cats.
All right.
And where I shared Sunday night with a group of people, they must have had the cat from hell, because I'm telling you what, I was wheezing 20 minutes into it, and I left there. I could hardly breathe, but it was one of those deals. But I thought it was really cute. I picked up at one group of folks I was with for most of the weekend, and a good brother named Corey, who's written a bit on our blog, been part of our show here since the beginning. Corey was hauling me over to this other place to spend an evening with some folks. That's where the really bad cat was. But anyway, as we stop at a supermarket to pick up some things for somebody's got a birthday that night, so we're getting some cake and some ice cream and things, we're trying to find the paper plates, paper utensils. And he turns up one aisle and he said, "Oh, that's not that. That's a chipper food aisle." And he turned and kept walking. I'm going, "What was that about?" And it really took me about 10 minutes, but boy, when I go all the way to Idaho to hear about chipper.
Jonathan's going to be really excited.
Things are bad. Things are real bad.
His cats become famous. It's fantastic.
I like what Meg said about chipper, or cats in general, I guess. So you remember what she said?
Oh, yeah, she denigrated all cats.
She
turned on me.
Meg, you're my hero.
She was asking for pictures of chipper and was championing him, and then she just turns on me at the very end and just, I'm not going to say it could get me in trouble again.
Yeah, the language was a bit. In fact, in our home, if you yell, "Cats!" our dogs go running out the doggy door, barking and screaming, looking for something to chew on. So I know that's not going to be wonderful news to our folks in Idaho, because they are cat lovers up there.
But, well, God bless Idaho and potatoes. I love it.
And maybe this month we're all cat lovers. The new Narnia movie's out. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have the chance to be on the Screen Actors Guild nominating committee, so I get all these, like, specially encrypted DVDs, so we watch this at home.
And wow, this is kind of like a big deal.
Yeah.
You looking for strokes here?
Yeah, I just kind of want to puff myself up some way, but it's just fun. I don't have to go to the movie theater anymore, but we were watching Narnia.
Oh, free movies.
Yeah, free
all
movies.
You want.
Hey.
And you've invited Wayne and Sarah over,
have
you?
Thank you, Jesus.
Have you invited Wayne and Sarah over?
Come on over, Wayne. Come on over.
Gee whiz.
You got a better TV than I do,
pal. I had to pay $400 at the theater to see this movie.
I thought the movie was fantastic, but what was so fascinating was to be able to kind of watch my two sons' faces. They were just mesmerized. Somehow because we had read through the whole Narnia series and stuff like that, and it was fun to just watch how both of them were just transfixed. They were really connecting with it. And you're gonna groan, Wayne, but Jonathan at the very tail end, he kind of said, "You know what, Dad, Aslan looks a lot like Chipper."
Not on his best fantasy, is that true?
Well, I sort of picture Chipper probably looks in the mirror and he probably sees a little bit of Aslan in himself, and it might just be a little cat dream.
Well, we did get Chipper's photo up on the website, so maybe we'll put a little picture of Aslan next to it, and now we can have people do their own comparison.
You're not going to see the resemblance, but I did like the roar. That was very good.
But if anyone would make me fall in love with a cat, it would be Aslan, because Sarah and I thoroughly enjoyed the movie. There's some production things that we would have probably preferred they did a bit differently. But in terms of staying faithful to the story, the Beaver, Mr. and Mrs. Beaver were just a hoot. I thought they were great. But staying faithful to the story, even though it's an appeasement-based view of the cross, which is Lewis's view of the cross, it's, you know, right, some deep magic has to be appeased somewhere. I kind of wish that were different, but it is what's in the book. And I tell you what, Sarah and I just sat there enthralled with it. We loved it. We loved the visuals. We loved the storyline. We loved what the kids. We thought they found some great actors for those kids.
Yeah, that little Lucy, she's
a cutie.
When her face just brightens up, you sort of feel the whole whole room warms up.
Yeah, and that same when Aslan roars. I didn't much care for the voice they used for Aslan, but boy, when he roars, that's a deal. And now we're coming up on Christmas. And can you believe it? Somehow Christmas this year has turned into this huge Christian controversy over whether you say Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, that's a deal. And then even some mega churches, I guess, are canceling their Sunday morning service because it falls on Christmas Day. And now that's quite a scandal.
What, they read your blog or something like that?
I don't.
The mega churches aren't going to church anymore?
Maybe that's the deal. Someone actually wrote me and said, you know, it's an interesting thing. When they're not doing the only thing that defines them as Christian, of course the world's going to get angry if going to church is the deal that defines it.
What do you think is at the core of all the controversy that's going on?
Oh, there's two things. I find the first one probably less exciting to me. Some groups are actually saying, you know what, there's going to be so many people gone on Sunday morning spending time with families and whatever, that let's not meet here. Let's let people be free to do whatever. And, yeah, gosh, I think that's an amazing thing. I know some other people are saying, what, now there's no room in the inn and you're not making room for Jesus on the holiday? Because I think some people can't. If you're not in the box on Sunday morning, you're not making room for Jesus.
It doesn't count.
Yeah, and I think that's nuts. I think canceling it is fine if that's what a group says. You know what, we're going to spend time with family that day. I thought the one that canceled it, though, you notice, they couldn't let the people spend a day without the pastor. So they actually sent out DVDs of a teaching and a service so that they would have that in the privacy of their own home. Or the hope was they'd share it with their families and
well,
the
that's
wider
a good
extended
stocking
family.
Stuffer.
Yeah, there you go. How would you like a DVD from
send out God Journey stocking stuffers? That'll be great.
Brad, no. I'll tell you what.
Sometimes
I got to keep restraint
there.
On this guy.
A little
so
religious.
I mean, that's a deal. I remember one lady called me. Gosh, this was probably 4 or 5 years ago, but her group of folks, the congregation she met with, she was leaving them, and she thought I would really be on her side about it. The reason she was leaving is they canceled the Sunday evening service in late January because of the Super Bowl. So now in her world,
they were bowing to the sports god.
Yeah, in her world now, the Super Bowl had replaced Jesus among all those other Christians. And so she was leaving them and thought I'd be on her side. And I said, you know what? No one's coming, or those that, particularly if you care about the game, those who are coming regret that they're there. I don't have any problem with saying, gosh, Sunday night, most groups don't even meet Sunday night anymore anyway, if that's an issue. But I don't think I won points with her because I wasn't jumping on that side
of
the argument.
It does seem to be arguments about religious form and tradition as opposed to the reality and substance. I mean, when you look at, you know, encouraging families to spend time and focus in on just investing in each other.
Particularly an extended family, some of which may not even know the Lord and may not even, and to be there and be part of them and not say, oh, I'm sorry, we have to go to our holy service moment and we'll be back later. I don't see the negatives in that.
Yeah, I don't either. And I'm not exactly sure I understand so much of the controversy around it other than that oftentimes controversy sells newspapers or creates stories or whatever. And so I think to some degree they're having to stir something up.
They are, but then I've noticed how people have kind of positioned themselves now. If you, at least on the internet traffic and some of the blogging and some of the things going on there, if you're meeting Sunday morning now, you're kind of more of a devoted group of people for Christmas morning.
Yeah, they're really committed.
Than if you're not. If you're not meeting, then, well, you go to one of those church light places.
Yes, gospel light.
Spirituality doesn't really count. Yeah, which I thought was really cute.
And it's a big issue that the mega churches are the ones, that, you know, it's like the big, huge mall consumer approach to church. It's they're the trendsetters, and it's like, oh my gosh, if those large churches, those really successful ones, they're not meeting, what statement is that sending? Are we on the slippery slope to secularism?
Oh, it kind of sounds that way, doesn't it? I mean, that's if you've made that meeting everything about your spirituality. I think one of the things we've advanced in this show is one of the problems with organized religion is it has done that. It has said Sunday morning is the only time that counts. You need to be in here, find your place in the pew, sit through the service, and if you do, that validates you. So when you've made it an icon, or as we get about here, the sacred cow, then when you punch that sacred cow and it falls over, it does make people nervous. I don't know how it can't. It certainly will.
Yeah, it would be like the church has made Christmas service its Super Bowl, and it's not holding the Super Bowl this year.
Uh-oh. And that's particularly on the holy day. I mean, if you get Christmas now, finally, this is the one day a lot of people go to the event who don't normally go to the event. So now you've given away your biggest, you're giving away your biggest day. I mean, you just see the people with the church calendars looking ahead going, oh, crud, Christmas falling on Sunday. That's bad for us. Boy, when you're caught up in that kind of thinking, it's interesting the things you end up doing and saying, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what's behind the rationale for some. It's kind of like, well, are they afraid people won't be there? Or, they, you know, what is the real passion behind it? Is this this desire that families would have that time invested with each other? Or is the fact that, gosh, we're not sure that the pews will be full?
Yeah, and one of the things I've learned is that you never know anybody's motives. I'm sure there are as many motives in this thing as some very honorable, some very, you know what, I don't want to put a whole sermon together. There's only going to be 16 people sitting out there. And I honestly don't know which it is, and it's probably very different. I like what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 4 about the whole why is somebody doing what they're doing. Paul said, look, I don't even know my own motives.
Yeah.
How am I going to know yours? I mean, the end of it all, God's going to let the motives of our heart be exposed. And we're going to see exactly why we did what we did. I love the fact that Paul said, I'm not even certain of my own. As best I know, I'm doing what God's asking me to do. But I don't even, that does not justify me, he says. The only thing he justifies is God and God alone. So on that day, when it's all going to be exposed, then we're going to get to know. So the motives of it, nah, I don't know. I'm sure they're mixed all over the place.
Well, it's fun. Just we have our own little family tradition of celebrating a little bit of the weekends leading up to, you know, the, sort of the Advent calendar. And so the four weeks that lead up to it, we just spend a little time each weekend just sort of, you know, sharing the whole story of the birth of Jesus with the kids. And what was really fun was watching Taylor as Kelly's just sort of reading through and sharing the story. Jared and Jonathan are little pyro, you know, maniacs in the making. Because we light the candles, and they're really fascinated with lighting the candles.
Yep.
Taylor has this little Playmobil manger scene. And what was so fun is that for her little mind, this is all centered on the baby Jesus. She set up the manger scene, not like it was. She took the manger scene from the other room, brought it in into the living room, and then put the little baby Jesus right in the center, and then had, it's like this, you know, a football hole. Everyone was crowding in over this focus. And what was so fun for us is just to watch is like, you know, this thing's transacting in her mind. Who is she identifying with in terms of Christmas? Well, she's a little one. She's identifying with Jesus.
Yeah, I'm gonna get the toddler.
And this is fantastic.
That's fabulous. Yep. And I don't know if you saw this Dilbert cartoon. It ran a few weeks ago, but I thought this was hysterical. I've got, I don't know the characters in there, but Dilbert and I think the little dog character in the thing is sitting on his bed and he says, I've decided to start a discount religion. He said, the tithing should only be 5%. And I'd let people sin as much as they wanted. And then he says at the end, the only problem is that I don't want to spend time with anyone who would join that sort of religion. I like his approach. Let's discount it, make it simple and easy. And then, boy, in the end of it, he doesn't want to spend time with the people he draws to his club. That's kind of sad.
Well, you know, I do think perhaps there's a genuine question being asked in the midst of all the little controversy, which is, I don't know if it's, you know, I think there's more made out of it than there is substance. But, you know, I think people are wondering, it's like, well, what really is the focus? You know, what really is important? I do think there may be the question being asked is like, well, gosh, if you're not meeting on Sunday and this is what you've always done, is there a statement being made? And I personally don't think there is being one. But I do think that that's probably, you know, underlying people's, you know, the whole issue of, gosh, you know, like, are you backsliding and are you not being as committed? I mean, the whole issue about whether you say Merry Christmas or, you know, Happy Holidays, what's up with that? That's becoming a big issue now.
It has become a big issue. I think basically O'Reilly's taking it on the chin for being the one that started it, you know. We've got Happy Holidays this and Happy Holidays that. No one's saying Merry Christmas anymore. But on his own website, he had Happy Holiday tree ornaments or something. So, and then they had to change them because people pointed out. Again, this is probably a big talking head. It's a conflict. It's a story the media's got to do because it's Christmas and we're looking for stories that haven't been done before. But honestly, I think the man on the street, or the woman on the street, has got this figured out. You know, when I know another believer, and I'm kind of bah humbuggy about Christmas. I'll be honest. I enjoyed it much more. We had little kids, and I'm working on it now. I've got a granddaughter, so when she's around, I'm going to be a little more Christmassy than normal. Basically, it's it's too much work and too much money and too much all that.
Wayne's kind of lazy.
Yeah, I am kind of lazy. But the family bits of it I love. The Jesus bits of it I love. It's just all the work and anyway, angst Bahama. Over gifts and all that stuff. Anyway, so I'm going to get into it a little better level here. But I think the person on the street, I don't mind saying Merry Christmas to somebody. I think is going to enjoy me saying Merry Christmas to them. If my neighbor is Jehovah's Witness, I'm not going to say it to them because the idea is to bless somebody. So them I might say Happy Holidays or Season's Greetings or particularly a Jewish family or a Muslim family. I'm probably not going to say, I don't know what it is. Is it Blessed Ramadan or Happy Ramadan? I don't even know. I'm not going to go there.
Have a great fast.
I'm not going to go there. I might say to a Jewish family that I know is observant, I might say, man, I hope you have a blessed Hanukkah or Happy Hanukkah or something. I might do that. But the idea of greetings, isn't it? It's not the greeting I need to give so I feel validated in my holiday. The greeting is basically to bless the hearer, to give grace to the hearer. And if I'm saying something that's offensive to you, why would I do it?
So you think Jesus would step back and compromise on his own holiday?
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying.
What a I think this whole thing is just a little strange.
Man, you're hacking up like, hairballs today. You spent too much time with Chipper or what?
No. It's that season of holidays of cold flu season in our house.
Had a bit of a bug traveling through the Cummings home. So
yeah.
We're going to try and
not
get
be
him.
As spiritual, I guess.
No, I'm sure that's not it.
The whole dynamic, it just seems so strange to make a controversy out of a desire to say hello and to bless somebody. Because I do think that, you know, the spirit and heart of it is you're wishing them well. And if what you're saying is closing a door or slamming one or offending them, I don't think Jesus would be all that thrilled with you having to, you know, die on that hill with the faithful. It's like, please say Christmas. It's like, I don't think that matters. I think it's the power of a life lived out. It's like, does your life celebrate who Jesus really is?
Right.
Can people see that without you having? I mean, our own family Christmas card that went out this year, somehow the store messed up, and Kelly had to change the border, and the only border that she had the choice for that worked with the picture says Season's Greetings. So we're part of the backslidden
group. You fell into the whole
group.
Bush thing because the Bush White House sent out Happy Holidays.
Yeah, so we only have Season's Greetings, so we're really kind of these incognito undercover Christians that we can't really name Christ.
I'm feeling much holier now just sitting here.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm sick. You're not.
I would say ours said Merry Christmas, but I don't think we sent any out.
yeah, bah humbug to everybody.
We put a web page up. It's easier.
But I think at the end of the day, what's so silly is that it's not about, where are you sitting on Sunday morning and what greeting are you giving, but what's the focus of your life and how is that being lived out? I mean, do your neighbors know that you're a Christian simply because you all get in the car on Sunday morning and drive off someplace? Or is it how you live Monday through Sunday?
No, it's because you put a cross on your house instead of a Santa Claus. That's how they know. Come on.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that great? But notice how much of this that we're talking about, whether it's, and I'll go back to season greeting in a minute, because I think one of the things that's been suggested is that Christian groups boycott stores or whatever that use Happy Holidays in their ads instead of using Merry Christmas. Now, first of all, I think people ought to be free to use Merry Christmas. My goodness, we live in a country where just about everybody, a small minority, does not observe it. Most people do. If you've got Merry Christmas, and there is a secular Merry Christmas as well as a kind of a Jesus Merry Christmas. There's both, and they overlap each other. So I think using it in the culture is fine. If it's offensive to somebody, let me know. I'll stop using it. Yeah. If I'm as I was in Nepal a number of years ago, and there's this Hindu stuff going on everywhere, should that whole country stop what it is and does because I've come to visit? And obviously
yes.
That's absurd. Well,
yes,
see,
absolutely.
I think that's absurd. I think I can be there and realize I'm in a place where the majority of people celebrate things I don't celebrate, but I don't want to rain on their parade either when I'm there. I don't have to participate. At the same time, I don't have to be offended if somebody says the wrong thing to me. So I think I think the man or woman on the street gets this. I think the culture works pretty well. If somebody says Merry Christmas to somebody, I've seen people say it to like a Jewish person or whatever, and they've kind of acknowledged it with a smile and went on. They didn't go home devastated that they live in a country that says Merry Christmas. But if you're a business and you're wanting to, you know, you got 100 people coming to your register that day, and you're training your employees, three or four of those might not appreciate having Merry Christmas said to them, and you don't know which those are. So instead, let's use season's greetings or happy holiday, something that's more generic. It's not a business trying to take Christ out of Christmas. I mean, that's absurd. That's just people being responsive to the public they're trying to serve. And I you know, I'd give people space on that. I'd boycott, go, that's just garbage to me. I'm not interested. I think we ought to be a lot more generous, a lot less sensitive, and doggone, stop getting hurt over everything because it's no big deal.
There are probably groups out there that are, you know, trying to blow up just about every manger scene out there because they have issues. But I think on the whole, that is such an absolute minority, and that, you know, frankly, it's probably newspapers and TV producers who are trying to find some way to drum up some kind of controversy so that we can sell more soap.
or get more offerings. You know, one of the scriptures that has been a real part of my journey, I think really speaks to what we're talking about here. This scripture has bugged me most of my post-college life. It's Jesus talking to right after James, and I think it's a sad scripture because in the first part it says Jesus begins to tell them he's going up to Jerusalem, he's going to die. That's when James and John decide, hey, this is the time to get in our request to be first and second in his kingdom, one to sit on his right and one to sit on his left. I mean, it's like your kids, when you announce you've got cancer, are ready to stake the claim on the inheritance. You know, it's that kind of feel to it. It's way out of line. But the other disciples are really ticked because they didn't think to ask for it first either, because the immutable law of the universe is if you call it, you get it. It works for shotgun. It works for shotgun in the car. I guess it works for a place in the kingdom.
I called it first.
And this is where Jesus responds to them all. He does this wonderful, I think the best teaching on leadership ever been done. It's only about 30 seconds. He said, and Jesus called them together. He says, you know that those who are regarded as rulers, the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them? It's not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. I love this. I mean, there's a whole leadership thing. That was the biggest part of my journey. I was one of those exercising leadership over people as I'm reading this going, I thought he told us we weren't supposed to do this. So that was a conflict. But the other part of this, where he says the Son of Man didn't come to be served. And I look at a lot of the religious angst from my brothers and sisters in this kingdom who are trying to preserve America for God and shape American culture as a godly culture, or at least the veneer of that, who want Merry Christmas said by every store clerk, or they're going to boycott. I think we have to ask this basic question. Are we asking the world to serve us, or are we serving the world? And what Jesus said here, if the Son of Man, I mean, if anybody had the right to come and say, serve me, you think it would be the Son of Man.
Right.
I think it would be.
I think that's fair.
But if he's saying, look, the reason I'm here is not for me to be blessed. It's not to get from you what I want from me. It is to be a blessing to you. It is to serve you. So in his sense, so that you might come to know my Father. I think that's the ultimate blessing and whatever was behind. But he wasn't trying to shape culture to make him comfortable or to make him win. Instead, he was about the culture being blessed by his being among it. And I don't see enough of that, I tell you. In our Christian angst to convert, and that's a lot of what motivated my getting into some of the bridge builders work in public schools, was that somehow we as Christians needed to serve the culture. And I don't mean serve its evil, serve its sin. I'm not talking that.
It's not acquiescing or compromising.
But being a blessing to people so that grace is imparted. And I don't mean being Mr. Nice Guy all the time either. But neither are we asking the world, in which we're no longer even a majority presence in the world, to conform everything to satisfy me. That'd be nuts.
Well, you just don't see Jesus imposing the kingdom on anybody. It's offered. It's available. It's at hand. It's near. But it isn't forced.
Yeah.
And he isn't looking about hierarchy or place. And even, you know, I think of when the whole issue of, you know, paying taxes is like Jesus responded to the realities and the demands of the cultural customs of the day and stuff like that. And I sort of feel like, you know, if there is any way to sort of focus in on Christmas and its importance and what's going on, you know, I think there would be a generous, good-hearted focus on what can I do to my neighbors, to my family around that would communicate that I love them, that there's good news, that there's something to be celebrated about this season. I mean, I think the thing that I get frustrated with is the whole commercialism surrounding, you know, Christmas. And I can even see we have to ward against it in our kids. It's just bizarre. On Jesus' birthday, everyone's wondering about, you know, what gifts should I get, or I'm going to make my Christmas. I'm just going, like, I don't see anyone in a whole lot of angst of figuring out, what can I give Christ today? I mean, it's his birthday.
Isn't that funny? We're all getting presents on his day because that works pretty well for everybody. But yeah.
I think what's exciting about that, I mean, you know, welcome to the lived out reality of the kingdom and the true good news of this gospel. It is somebody else's birthday. It is somebody else's celebration, but you're going to get blessed by it. you get the rewards and the overflow of his reality being brought to your life, whether you believe in him or not.
And downright greedy about it sometimes. I mean, this is what I want. This is disappointed if you didn't get it. And I mean, all the angst that goes with the gift giving. And see, that's one of the reasons I think Christmas ought to be done away with myself. But
are you that bah humbug about it?
Oh, you know, it's fun to be bah humbuggy. My wife got me a T-shirt years ago that had bah humbug in old English script on the front of it. So, I mean, people enjoy having fun that way. But I'm pretty good. When it comes right down to celebrating the day and celebrating the story and being with family, those things I try to. Yeah,
when
I
Amy
that.
Starts cooing, you're going to put the Santa hat back on.
Putting lights on the house, dragging that stupid tree in every year.
You should see
it.
The house across the street from the Jacobsons is I think, Santa Claus Lane. It's huge. And so I have a good joke with Wayne, but like...
No, Sarah said it was nothing last night. Did you hear it? It was nothing. Because she's got this house on the other side of town we're going to go see tonight. She's got penguins popping out of stuff. And I mean, she is so excited. She just says the one across, which has more lights than any human being should be allowed to have. But this one, I guess, has 10 million more. So we're going to go see that tonight, I guess. She wanted you guys to come too. You open?
Sure.
What are you going to say?
We're right there. Yeah. Well, yeah. At a moment like this, can I refuse? No.
So, yeah, when I get down to the season, one of the things that really hit me last year, and I, you know, the Christmas carols get a bit weary for me, but some of them I really love. I love singing them. And the third verse last year of O Come All Ye Faithful, this just the phrase, Word of the Father, now in flesh appearing. I think it strikes to what you were just talking about. How is God making himself, how is Jesus making himself visible in me? And not just on the 25th of December, but throughout the course of the whole year. Living in the Los Angeles area like we do, you see a lot of ads in the paper for, you know, Matthew Broderick now appearing in, you know, this play at the Pantages or wherever the theater is. That phrase really hit me last year. Word of the Father, now in flesh appearing. That God's presence invested in the Son and celebrating that whole incarnational thing. But then I think the hope of the early church was that that process continues on. Paul's language in Galatians 4:16 is that to this end he'd labor and strive until Christ takes shape in you.
Right.
So in fact, today, the Word of the Father, now in flesh appearing through our lives as we let him increasingly shape us to be like him. And it's at times like this that I do. When I was thinking about that phrase last year, I thought of three or four people I'd met over the last year who in some incredible ways had let the Father take shape in them. A mother whose 24-year-old daughter committed suicide. We've talked about her before here. A woman who takes care of HIV/AIDS people who are dying because her husband, ex-husband, had been afflicted with it. And she went to care for him and his gay lover because God asked her to. That began a series of events where 50, 60 gay men had come and lived in her home, and she cared for them as they were dying of AIDS. And all of those came to faith in those times in repentance. So amazing story. When I think of people who are letting Jesus take shape in them and just the realities of living their life and being obedient to what he's asked and doing things that you can't explain in worldly terms or worldly motivations, you don't do those things for yourself. To me, that's where Christmas takes on a reality. But then that's a reality. See, when I get misty-eyed about talking about Christmas, then why put that on one stupid day every year? Why don't we live that every day all year long?
I think that's where Paul was saying that, you know, the whole issue about holidays and stuff like that, one day being special. His issue is, you know, let's live this thing out. You know, if you're going to celebrate Christmas, then really celebrate it by letting God be made manifest in your life and evident to all. But I do think that the whole call of being a Christian, a follower of Christ, is that that is to be celebrated as the true living reality every single day.
And letting him, as the Word, take flesh in us now, take appearing in our flesh in the reality of the world we live in with neighbors and friends and coworkers and all that stuff.
I think one of my favorite Christmas songs, you know, seasonal songs of, is O Come, O Come, Emmanuel. The whole idea of God with us. And that sense that, you know, I know what it's like to be anxious and to be, you know, like, oh, God, where are you? And what is exciting, that is, I think, a message that's lost that needs to be, you know, recentered and made a focus is the fact that here is God stepping into the affairs of humanity, coming in a humble, dynamic way, but just he's right there. And to be able to make God front and center in our lives, in our families, that's what I think for us is the whole central reality of Christmas is we're trying in the busyness of day to go like, look, let's not forget the reality. God is here right with us. Hmm. And it's not just true on Christmas. It's true every single day.
Yeah, that's not just Christmas. That's life.
Yeah.
And that's the way to live.
And that's a gift to us.
So to all of you, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, in a real big way. Have a wonderful time with your family as you celebrate the centrality of the gift of Jesus to our lives.
And hopefully if you're hearing this after that, you would have had that kind of day or will have that kind of life.
Bless you.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your questions or feedback by email or at our blog at thegodjourney.com. Or you can call 24 hours a day to our comment line at 805-626-4212.